You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. It take this long for us to get a Neil Gaiman based television show?
What was the question? I forgot.
Well, first we had to go through all the John Peters drafts that involved giant spiders.
Yeah, right. I don't know if John Peters was ever actually involved in a Gaiman production, but if so, that would explain it.
Sandman.
But several times. Actually have a god involved with spiders, so it would work in this.
Mr. Nancy. Yeah. Who, once again, one of the weirder things going on in television right now is that that actor Orlando Jones is making one hell of an acting comeback working in fantasy stuff.
You mean Trolando Jones?
Trolando. Yeah, playing Mr. Nancy. And then actually he was really great on Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I can't believe how good Orlando Jones is now.
It's shocking that he's good as a dramatic actor somehow.
Yeah, really wouldn't have expected, even though he's definitely kind of playing up the funny to some degree here. But
oh yeah, he's a caricature of something.
Yeah. That's racist against that particular god.
I'm like, wait a second, is this racist? No. No, it's not. Right? I don't know.
He is having fun. Like, as a god.
Yeah.
I think goes along with
it. Well, he's a trickster god, so they generally are in a good mood.
I think this is his role.
Yeah.
Because he is a trickster in real life.
Yeah, everyone, if you follow him on Twitter.
Yes, everyone who follows him on Twitter knows that he's a troll.
How spoilery do we want from
this? This is a full-on spoiler review. This is for people who've seen the show.
What's a spoiler for the TV series versus a spoiler for the book?
This is a spoiler for the TV series.
Okay.
But
so we don't want to talk, like, we do a portion at the end where we can talk about things in the novel.
You can talk about it as long as it's not, like going to spoil stuff that hasn't happened yet in the
show. Spoiler, Jesus died. Well,
yes,
all the Jesuses died.
All the Jesus. Well, but no, not all of them, because remember she even says that Easter says at one point, oh, well, there's a few that didn't die.
Wasn't there, like, a baby man Jesus in the background?
Don't know if there was a baby man Jesus, but there was one that had a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because then the Holy Blood, Holy Grail theory is that whole thing that, oh, Jesus didn't die. They faked it, and they brought him off, and he married Mary Magdalene and formed the whole line of kings.
Da Vinci Code!
And that, Carvingian kings.
And that the Holy Grail is actually just means it's his bloodline. There is no actual Holy Grail. See? That now I do know something that's not true.
You guys
true.
Need to pick a legend and stick with it.
Yeah, so we're talking about American Gods, the television series adaptation, the first season. Like I said, we're going to be as cautious as possible about not spoiling what's going to happen after this first season, at least as according to the book. Although, the show has already taken quite a few liberties away from the books. So it'll be interesting to see how far that goes down the road, or if indeed this continues on past the book.
Good thing I barely remember the book.
Well, Gaiman has suggested a couple of times that he's going to do a sequel and that the roots of the sequel will be in the show.
Yeah, and Anasazi Boys is which
Anansi.
Is the is that it?
Yeah,
Anansi.
Anasazi or Native American?
Sorry. Well, is basically about Mr. Nancy's character, right? So, and they're obviously making him into a character people are going to want to see more of.
Oh yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a good 2 or 3 episode arc in the middle of the second season that's just about that.
Yeah, I would have liked to see more of Mr. Nancy. I mean, we are introduced to him in the second episode, and when that came out, there were articles everywhere like, best opening to a TV episode ever. And I totally agree.
That
like,
is terrific.
He did such an amazing job, and it was such good content. I'd like to see an Anansi Boys thing where he's leading it, but to be honest, I didn't really like the book. So, I don't know.
I remember really liking it, but also going, this is far from my favorite Neil Gaiman thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of surprised when it took on the legs it did, not just for Gaiman, who's considered
Look at the legs.
Its, what?
Because it's a spider.
No, that was not a pun. You made it a pun.
I did.
Next time, just go for the accidental genius.
How many legs? 8.
Gaiman considers it one of his best books. A lot of his fans do. Like I said, I didn't. Obviously, you didn't either, but I thought it was good. But it does seem to translate pretty well under the tutelage of Michael Fuller as the showrunner here. Brian Fuller and Michael Green. True.
Two people.
A portmanteau of their names. who is using a very similar visual style that he used in his previous show, Hannibal, Brian Fuller, that is.
Yeah.
I found very similar in some ways. It's very sort of micro close-ups.
Close-ups of blood.
Close-ups, a whole lot of Dutch angles, surprisingly few deer.
True.
There were
a lot of deer,
there is a deer
in Hannibal.
Isn't there?
It was a buffalo.
Yeah, there's a big white
buffalo. Flaming eyes.
Yeah.
But aside from Brian Fuller, Michael Green's on a hell of a winning streak, like this year especially.
Yeah, what else has he done? Fill us in.
Well, he did Kings before that, but this year...
I heard that was good. I did not watch it.
He did Logan.
That was very good.
Alien Covenant.
That was not so good.
Blade Runner 2049 is coming up.
I'm from the future. I saw it, and it's not good.
And Mustache Express, a.k.a. Murder on the Orient Express.
I'm also from the future, and it was amazing.
Every time I watch that trailer,
just,
I'm like...
Winning streak as far as, like, has so much stuff coming out, or it was already...
Every time I watch that trailer for that, I'm like, this is really corny, and yet it totally makes me want to see this movie like crazy. That's that huge Kenneth Branagh mustache. Yeah. I'm like, I love it. Let's watch.
Johnny Depp wasn't involved.
I'm glad, because when I heard he was involved, I was like, fuck, if they make him Perot, I'm not going to watch it. Yeah. And thank God he's not.
Who's Perot?
The world's greatest detective.
No, I mean, who's playing
Perot? Oh, Kenneth Branagh.
But also, who's on first?
I don't know. Kenneth Branagh. Yeah. At least he will be.
I don't know where to go with that.
All right, let's go back to American Gods on Stars, which means as well as watching adaptation of the book, you're getting a Stars show, which means lots and lots and lots of sex and deep... cut amounts of slow motion violence, which once again, after Hannibal, Fuller was the right guy for.
Finally, we have a show that shows more dicks than tits.
A lot of dicks here.
In one episode, they had more dicks than all six seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and you know what? The first time they showed a dick on this show, I went into work and someone was like, "That dick shot was gratuitous." And I was like,
are you
fucking shitting me?
I read someone on Facebook saying that, and I responded similarly. I was like, really? So do you say that when it's a naked woman? And there's just
no response. Because that would be gay.
except on Black Sails, where even then it's just kind of like, okay, so...
Well, once again, with the boobs. Stars television, yeah. it's lots and lots and lots of nudity, and it doesn't care which gender it's from.
This one, though, at least this... None of the nudity in this feels gratuitous, and part of that is the setup of the world they have created, where it feels... For all that we're dealing with urban fantasy and we're dealing with gods, it feels very natural and very lived in. So when we have moments like we have Salim and the djinn having what is almost certainly the most graphic and prolonged gay sex scene, and honestly the best, that has ever been on TV, cable or otherwise.
And probably the only gay sex scene on TV that's featured to brown men.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even think of...
And as a loving couple at that.
Yeah. Where it's, like, consensual and, like, joyous. Yeah. What the hell?
Actually,
gross. Gross. Yeah. Ew, they're both boys.
Oh, wait. I didn't know they were in love. Well, now it's disgusting.
Well, it's loving. I wouldn't necessarily say that.
Love, yeah.
Yeah. But it's... Like, romantic love. It's definitely more...
It all feels so natural. So even when we do get, you know, boobs aplosa, or we get dicks, you know, dicks aplenty, it's all... in a way that feels organic to the show. It doesn't feel like it's like, hey, it's boobs, and now you'll pay attention to all the backstory. It's we're watching,
like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we're watching a, you know, a goddess of love, or we're watching a literally ecstatic, in the classic sense, ritual.
This does seem like a show, though, that sometimes is just hyper-aware of the environment we live in, is just daring people to get upset about stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like hanging Ricky Whittle from a tree, like lynching a black man in the first episode. Which they do address, and there's a reason why that's an important thing in here.
Nothing
it was
in this
not
show
a gratuitous
happens by accident,
thing.
And it is, if you will pardon the obvious joke, ballsy as hell, because I have never seen a show that is willing to just go double barrel middle fingers to everybody on so many different levels. Mm-hmm. Like in the sixth episode, A Murder of Gods. It has what is one of the best openings, Anansi on the slave ship, also really good, but this one is gorgeous too, of Mexicans trying to make it into the United States. Mm-hmm. And as they're crossing through the Rio Grande, one of the, you know, their coyote says, if you can't, the river is swollen, it is deeper than normal, the current is faster, if you cannot swim, do not cross. and they have made the audience aware one of the members of the family can't swim, and he's going to try to cross anyway. And as he's going through, he starts to drown, and suddenly, as he's about to go under for the last time, a hand reaches down, grabs him, grips him tight, and pulls him from perdition, and pulls him out of the water. And as he's, you know, hauls him to shore, and he's walking on the water. And the guy says,
Thank you.
Who are you? And in this...
I don't recognize
you. My name's Dave.
He's like, I don't recognize you when you're not wrapped around a candle.
when he says, you know who I am, it is a gorgeous moment. And then immediately... he's shot.
Yeah.
He just gets killed by a militia that's there looking for illegal immigrants.
In the name of Jesus.
And one of them is carrying a rosary.
Yeah.
And his gun says, by thy will.
Deep irony going on throughout this entire show at multiple different levels. It's interesting that in the very Brian Fuller way, this is not telling a conventional narrative. I mean, often, and I've read people being frustrated that they'll be like, okay, we were like at a very tense moment and you spent an entire episode talking about something else altogether, like the episode that tells Emily Browning's whole backstory, plays Shadow Moon's wife, who's now a revenant, zombie, except she doesn't eat brains. Wait a minute, why is this? We want to know about all that other stuff. Well, shut the fuck up. This is how you tell this type of story, both a Fuller story or a Gaiman story, and it adds a lot of important and colorful backstory to a character who wasn't anywhere near as well developed in the book.
Oh yeah, I don't remember any backstory.
That's because she's such a cipher in the book. Yeah. Right. She's there to die and motivate Shadow, and you get little hints of personality after she's come back to life. But then her personality, her entire arc is, well, she cheated on Shadow, she died, now she's back to life, and she loves him again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas...
even the backstory for Puppy is changed. Where, that's more romantic comedy. She's a travel agent, she doesn't work in a casino in the book, and she's much more dynamic in this, and she's much more of a character, which is great. Mm-hmm. You don't hire Emily Browning and then just make her show up for two episodes, and that's basically...
She's also not a saint. Like, she's not a good person. She's a bad person. And I think that's kind of refreshing that most of the female characters in this are not good people.
Well, most of the characters, period, are not good people per se, but they're all shades
of Leachman.
They're all shades of gray.
Of course, Leachman is treasure.
some of them are definitely bad guys because the plot seems to make clear that they are at this point, at least.
I question that because one of the things that's really interesting. And this is really, because this is a Brian Fuller show, this is pretty deliberate. The only reason we think that we're on the side of Odin and the old gods is because we're following them. Mm-hmm. But when you get right down to it, none of the new gods, and every time I say that, I keep expecting Orion and Darkseid to show up. None of the
Deep
new gods have done anything terribly egregious that none of the old gods haven't done.
In fact, odd gods have been, in the run of the show, we've seen the old gods be much bigger dicks than we've seen the new gods be. In fact, the new gods, like Crispin Glover, was like, I am literally giving you every chance here. And we're regularly saving old gods from, like, dying out.
Yeah, we just
from
have to find
having
a new way
researchers.
To spin it.
Yeah, we're like, going, okay, well, we'll bring you in and we'll teach you how to be relevant again. You're like, what's so bad about that? Yeah.
I don't care that Techno Boy is a dick.
the biggest disappointment with Techno Boy is that they recast him as like this skinny young hipster kid instead of like, because he was a fat kid, and as a fat American, I'm like, all right, we're going to see a fat American on screen, and no, we're robbed. We need more fat
actors. I wonder if they decided to make him more like a kind of like a
tech bro.
Like a tech bro,
what most people consider technology to be in 2000 when the novel was written versus what most people consider technology to be, like the face of technology now has kind of merged from the fat guy in the mom's basement to more, young
tech bro with an e-cig.
And the
flute.
It completely makes sense why the character was
the changed. Mountain Dew red hat,
And one thing I really like are some of the changes. They have made substantial changes to the book. One of my favorites is the character of Bilquis, who in the book we see her twice. We see her as a sex worker who then absorbs a worshiper, and then we see her get mowed down. We see her die. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this, she plays a much bigger role, and now it's a question of, is she more powerful than she was in the books for damn sure, But now it's a question of, is she on the side of the new gods who now, who, you know, after the technical boy made her the goddess of Tinder?
Yeah.
Or is she going to betray them because she clearly has no love for them? She's the goddess of love and right. of beauty. And she, and I believe, actually an ascended mortal, because I don't think the Queen of Sheba was ever actually a goddess.
And Odin seems to be having not so much luck recruiting the darker gods like Vulcan and what have you, but as, has better luck recruiting some of the lighter ones like Easter, who was like, hey, yeah. it's time to show off. You're a badass. Yeah. You know, she's like, oh, hell yeah. By the way, deep love for the casting on that.
Oh,
God,
yeah.
yes.
I mean, oh, the casting... all around, like Gillian yeah. Anderson. Oh, come yeah. on.
Gillian Anderson. Am I the only one who's disappointed that the first appearance they stuck with Lucille Ball from the book and didn't make her Gillian Anderson? Like, if
oh,
she was Scully,
oh, she is going to be Scully in some
at some
episode,
point. They'll make right. her Scully.
Well, you would have thought, because I mean, let's face it, Shadow would have been an X-Files fan,
yeah,
more than an I Love Lucy fan.
True.
So, but, like the first appearance,
but
could have.
But everyone's an I Love Lucy fan.
But in her appearance, as David Bowie was just like,
yes.
I mean, gave me the yeah. chills.
And then all the lyrics they worked in. Including like Under Pressure.
Oh, my personal favorite. Yeah, there's a terror of knowing what Mr. World is about.
Yeah, yeah, which is Under Pressure, yeah.
But Kristen Chenoweth, who's worked with Fuller before, she was one of the big characters on the criminally underseen Pushing Daisies, which is, if you haven't watched it yet, it's one of the most charming and original TV shows ever made.
It's on CW Seed for free. Go see it.
It's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. She is so perfect for this role. I didn't see it in my head until I saw it.
She's expanded from the novel, too. Which is
yeah, great. And looks like she'll be a major part of the season to come.
Yeah.
It was weird because I didn't realize it was the last episode when I watched it, and I was kind of
really?
You know, you're just like, what the fuck is that? That felt final. What the? And look it up, I'm like, no!
Yeah, it was only 8 episodes. It was a short season.
Really, yeah, we're about the halfway point of the book, so if I had to guess, then the second season's going to wrap up the rest of the action from the book, and then third season's going to be the start of what would have been the sequel.
Yeah, and incorporating probably stories from the short
and
stories and the other, the novella.
They dropped so many hints about what could happen. I mean, when she said, and now there's star, when media says, and now there's star men waiting in the sky, Brian Fuller has said, and we're going to see them.
Yeah. Let me say how great Ian McShane is here, who
yes.
is playing, I think, the most Ian McShane-y role since his role in Deadwood.
Which is so weird, because they originally didn't have him read this. They I already forgot who he read for originally, and then he's like, oh, he read for Chernabog.
Right.
And he's just like, I can kind of do the voice, but there's better people to do the voice. What about this? And he actually asked to read for Wednesday. They're like, why didn't we think of that? Of course.
And then,
it seems so obvious.
And then Peter Stormare was like a no-brainer for Chernabog, you know.
Yeah, he walked away with that role.
Peter Stormare, star power.
yeah, Ian McShane, so you just hang on his every word. It's such a great
He's
performance.
So good.
And honestly, Ricky Whittle, who I thought was the best thing about the show The 100, which I kind of stopped watching after they wrote him out of the show. It's like, don't care as much.
Well, they actually gave him a personality. Like in the 100, he doesn't really have one,
but he's still great in it.
Yeah,
and
but
here
in the book also the character has very little of a personality.
He's more of a cipher.
And
here he still is. He's kind of the audience avatar, like the what the fuck is going on. But he's also more than that. They haven't left him at just a cipher. Mm-hmm. We do get a lot of depth with his character, and we feel more of his confusion and pain than anybody else in here, except possibly Emily Browning's character a bit. Who, as it goes on,
I would even say the leprechaun,
and even the leprechaun.
Yeah. I feel his pain.
It's also freaking great. Mad Sweeney, played by Pablo Schreiber, who, by the way, just announced he wants to play Wolverine in future movies.
Okay, oh, that's so meta?
But, like in the comics, they've got now Wolverine's son from an alternate dimension is now in it, and he's got kind of reddish blonde hair and actually looks like him. And I'm like, make him Wolverine's son, not Wolverine.
But yeah, you're like Pablo Schreiber and Emily Browning have such great chemistry.
Yes.
Oh yeah. I mean, they can't stand each other, and they're both out for their own thing, but they're so funny playing off each other.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We see like two different road trips going on. We see the Shadow and Mr. Wednesday road trip, and then we see the Dead Wife and Leprechaun road trip, and they're so different. Like, we, like Shadow, are listening to Odin's every word, and then, like, you secretly also want to be in the back of that ice cream truck with the leprechaun and Laura and be like, oh, they're fighting again.
Come on, Mom, Dad, stop it.
Even that, just like the fact that Emily Browning, like Laura Moon and to a certain extent Mad Sweeney have no respect and no sense of awe among like of the circumstances they're in.
Right.
And that just gives them so much to work with and so much fun. So mm-hmm. the moment that you actually see, like, Laura interacting with the gods, it is great because she's not confused. She's not in awe. She's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's just who, it seems like that's who she always was. She's a take-no-fucks type of person. You're a god. But, so what? Let's get to what I'm here for.
Yeah. Speaking of perfect casting, Dane Cook as Robbie.
Well, playing, like, the least likable character.
Exactly.
And you're like,
who do I want to die after getting their dick bit off?
Dane Cook, of course! Yes!
Perfect casting.
And then spending all of eternity with his own cock shoved up his own ass.
Yes!
That's just a beautiful thing. And once again, Jeremy Davies as Jesus Prime, who's just so great. I love that. I love Jeremy Davies. He's got so much range, that actor.
Oh, yeah.
Watching him go from Faraday to one of the Crow brothers, I forget which character.
From Justified?
Yeah, from Justified. Yeah, playing one of the redneck hicks.
Yeah, the guy is like in almost every season.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd never thought he was going to continue on, but he just keeps popping back up.
So, what do you think about the fact that they restored Mad Sweeney's Irish accent? Because he purposely lost it in the book, and the Shadow makes fun of him for that.
Oh, I think they were like, people won't realize he's Irish because he is a Jewish boy named Pablo.
Plus, it's more fun to hear him with the Irish accent anyway. Let's face it. He's got a beautiful accent.
It's a lot funnier to hear him go, "Oi, dead wife."
And the whole storyline that involves like him in the past what's the name of the character that Essie McGowan plays?
Also played by Emily Browning.
Yeah, also played by Emily Browning, mm-hmm. which is a great standalone episode. I mean,
very Cloud Atlas feel there with the red hair.
A little bit. But once again, great standalone episode. I really hope they don't abandon that in the next season and continue to do more.
Most of the books somewhere in America, so I'm curious, you know, if they're going to make new ones. I hope they do.
I hope so.
I hope they do too, because there's still a lot more to be seen, like with Ibis and Jaquel, who I really want to see more of. Because one of the things that works so well is the actors they've got playing Ibis and Jaquel. You know, from the way they interact with each other, they've been together for forever. And it just comes out without speaking.
Basically since the beginning of civilization.
Right, but it comes out without speaking with the way they interact. And it's just great little character moments like that that make all of these characters come alive. Just the same way that the Zorias, especially Cloris Leachman, are all able to bring themselves alive. And Cloris Leachman, who would have thought you could get someone who could actually stand up to Ian McShane when he's in full, like,
I wanted to see them fuck. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to see them fuck.
I don't know if I wanted to see it.
I
would have been glad if I'd known it had happened. But that
would be like,
nice. No, I don't think I would be. All hail Cloris Leachman, but I don't think there was any point of her career I wanted to see her having sex with someone. Just saying.
I'm making
when she was younger, she was a hot
Yeah,
bitch.
She's always a little odd.
I'm making a pinch face like Cloris Leachman face.
Kiss Me Deadly.
I have not seen
that.
She's
great in Kiss Me Deadly.
Maybe I have. I don't even know. So where do you think all this is going in terms of, like, things they're going to change from the book? Because, once again, we don't want to spoil anything big from the book. But do you think there's any big new things that this is setting up?
I need to reread the book because it's been a while since I've read it. But I don't think they've set themselves at a point where they can do the dropping Shadow off in the middle of, like, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they have put it, because as I recall, they did that because they were hiding him from the new gods,
mm-hmm.
and now everybody knows who he is, and they've made such a big deal, especially out of the prison scene, the police station scene, where we're introduced to Mr. World for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, some of the things they shifted around, like, the whole police station thing was completely different, and that ended with him getting lynched.
Yeah.
Like, and that was a different character that did it, like, Technology Boy didn't even interact with him, if I'm remembering correctly. And so, like, just those things shifting around completely. And then other things that they've added to Shadow's character to make him more emotional and more volatile than he ever was in the book. I don't really know, like, how they're going to handle that. But, like, are we going to see new gods? Like, Vulcan was a new addition, which apparently Gaiman himself actually wrote. He was going to write that episode, then he couldn't. But then his ideas for it became that episode. So Vulcan was someone he suggested.
Played very well by Corbin Burnson.
Yeah, almost unrecognizable. I
piece together who he was, like, towards the very, he's like, wait, that's Corbin Burns.
Dude, that scene where he cuts off his head with a sword, I was like, yep, that's what I was waiting for.
Thank you. Another moment of just, like, I'm amazed at the stances that Fuller is willing to pull, where he is flat out saying, yeah, so, the like, this god has decided, now that, he is now no longer the god of volcanoes and blacksmithing, he is the representation of the worship of guns, right. And things like domestic terrorists are worshipping him.
Well, he's, definitely playing deeply with that aspect that was in the original book of how would old gods become worshipped again? How would they become new gods? How would they adapt to our society? And expanding well past what the book did.
Yeah.
For sure.
So how would we worship Odin?
Something to do with electricity, presumably?
No.
Maybe storms?
Con artists.
Or we worship the Weather Channel.
Oh, yeah. Some people do.
They do. Seriously. Yeah. My sister's wife is deeply, deeply into stuff.
They wanted to make him, a satellite in this?
Yeah. They're going to make an orbital weapons platform because one of his names is Glad of War.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what do you think, we know there is going to be a different aspect of Odin coming in that if it follows the book will largely take the place of the current aspect. Do you think they're going to change that in order to make sure Ian McShane doesn't go anywhere?
I honestly don't remember what you're talking about.
I do. It is going to be interesting. We have established that all the different Jesuses are very different looking.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible that when we get to that part, that there could be another actor.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is the fact that everyone is so deeply in love with Ian McShane in this part, you think they might change it so they don't have to lose Ian McShane.
The Jesus thing and why that works, because there are so many different representations of Jesus, whereas Odin, there are fewer representations of him. He does encounter more than one Odin in the book. He encounters a separate Odin in a separate country who looks almost exactly like, except for certain things are a little different, but the face is the same. So, there can be more than one version of Odin worked into the story.
Played by the same actor.
So that's a possibility coming up.
Yeah, but he also has his, spiel at the end of that episode where he listed all of his names.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe all those Odins are him, or, all the other Odins had died off because people stopped worshipping them. We see what happens when gods don't get worshipped anymore. They die off.
But that Odin says, the alternate Odin says, he is me, but I am not him. So each one is all of those things, and also not necessarily all of them at the same time.
Yeah.
So
they are many and they are one.
Yeah, he's the American incarnation of him.
One thing I would be very interested in seeing, and I don't know if they're ever going to get into this, is the modern paganist movement. Because right now there are Odin worshippers and there are Thor worshippers. Most of them happen to be white supremacists.
Yeah.
But
I don't think they're going to touch
on that.
And
then also the comic movie representations of Thor and Odin.
However much money it takes to get Chris Hemsworth to show up at Thor for even 10 seconds, pay it.
Which isn't Thor dead in the book? I forget.
They haven't mentioned it in the series. So
yeah.
I don't know, but when this season started, I was at the gym and somebody asked me if I was an Odinist because I have crow tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you speak of things you do not understand.
Not realizing.
And then I drove off in my muscle car.
And then they gave you a white power tribute.
So if we were going to make any gods and include them in upcoming seasons, who do we worship as a society?
I want to see Xenu.
Yeah. Yay!
Xenu. Yeah.
And then for sure.
Played by Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. John Travolta.
Actually, I would love to see somebody we haven't seen do that many performances come in and do that. Get Beck to do it, who is also a Scientologist.
Or Jason Lee.
Well, I would think only a former Scientologist would be able to do that.
Oh, true. In that case, Leah Remini.
Oh, that would be awesome. Oh, they'd have her killed, though.
Gaiman indicated that if he did anything further with this, he would have to have a god of sports.
Oh,
because that makes sense.
Of course.
I'm amazed that we haven't seen a god of capitalism yet. I mean, this is globalism, but we haven't seen god money.
There's wood and stone in the book, so is there oil?
Mm-hmm. I think there should be a fanboy one.
They mentioned wood.
Yeah, there should be a god of geeks or something. Yeah, like God of Obsession.
Yeah, that has many different forms as well.
Media is kind of a catch-all for that to kind a certain extent. But
you think there's like, I mean, like Tech Boy is kind of a like subset god.
Yeah.
Newspaper was separate from media, and the media became...
That's what I'm saying. Like, it seems like media is the big one, and then there's the demigods under them that are like, we're all the specific aspects.
God of Twitter.
I mean, there's a god of Tinder now, so why not?
Actually,
wouldn't that be Katy Perry?
Oh,
yeah, no, right?
The ones that are going to be fucked up is when we get to the gods of Reddit.
Oh, oh no! No.
Because if they put Pepe on the screen...
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Haven't all those subreddits closed down by now?
Nope.
No?
Oh, God, no.
It's the internet. It has many deep, dark spaces, even without going to the deep web.
This one I would love to see. It is a reference that only people who grew up on the internet in the 90s would get. Shub Internet.
Is that like Shub Garoth?
Shub Niggeroth, yeah.
Shub Niggeroth from Conan?
Shub Internet was a Usenet joke. And became like the unofficial, you know, you would sacrifice packets to Shub Internet in order to get a good connection.
I mean, I would love to see Crom and stuff like that in here, or like even the ancient elder gods from Lovecraft. That'd be terrific.
Actually, the Lovecraftian gods would almost have to show up, at least near Lathotep.
But nobody really believes in them.
You know, you say that, but how many of these new Odinists really believe either?
The god of irony.
But that's like not even like the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Nobody has faith in him.
How dare you?
People have still carried out things in his name. But yeah, so where do you separate that?
That's like
true belief.
Yeah, nobody believes Tinder is a god. They just are obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Well, they worship Tinder. But yeah, Shub Internet, the Invisible Pink Unicorns, the Slack. The
Bob Dobbs one?
Yeah.
We must worship Slack?
Yes.
Yeah. Church of the Subgenius.
Like the minor cults, like the internet cults, like the cult of the Subgenius.
Dude, if they do a big like gathering of the gods, another sequence, because technically the Easter one was kind of like that, I would love just don't even explain it. Just a guy in the background who's clearly Bob Dobbs with the pipe and the hair and everything. Just like, that's good.
All right.
So let's go to final thoughts here. And also include, if you can, if there's anything here, because we've been nothing but positive. So if there's anything you thought that you would be critical about this series, go ahead and add that in. And George, let me get started with you.
Okay, I think to the extent that Hannibal was particularly slow, this does have its slow moments, but I think on a whole, it's faster paced than the book. And I appreciate that. The book, like, is so meandering, and so let's just drop these characters off and you know, just basically spoon feed you little bits of, little bits of information.
Yeah.
You know, and you piece together the world and what's going on. And there's not really... The narrative isn't that driving. And I think it's an improvement, especially for Fuller, who really likes, you know, things to be beautiful and isn't afraid of slower pace.
Yeah.
You know, I think they've done a great job of that. I think this is an improvement from the book, you know, as far as pacing goes and everything. I really enjoyed it. The visual style of it is impeccable. The casting's great. I loved everybody. For some reason, I think it's a better show to, especially the first season, to binge than it was to watch week to week, because week to week you get a little bit more of, not enough happened in that episode.
Right.
So being able to binge it, it's just like, okay, this is great, and now you can go back and pick up on things that you didn't catch. I mean, I really like the way that they're fleshing out. I like where it's going. I think that it's going to continue to improve on aspects of the book, which I appreciate. So, I mean, overall, are we doing the rating?
Doing the rating? Yeah,
yeah. Overall, I give this an 8 of 10, but 8 of 10. sorry, I should have thought this. We'll give it 8 of 10 decapitations.
There you go. Sarah, what do you think?
I think my only criticism of this would be, it's actually kind of a big thing. There are a lot of moments where Shadow's like, I don't believe any of this. And it's like, your fucking wife came back from the dead.
What does it take?
What does it take? And that's one of my biggest pet peeves in any fantasy sci-fi horror movie, where like, the world is going batshit insane around you, and you're like,
that's peculiar.
I don't think it's real. And I think some people might interpret this as like, the old ways are better and the new things are bad. But I think looking deeper into this, like we said, the old gods are probably not the good guys. The new gods maybe aren't either, but maybe this whole concept of gods and all that is just not great. Like, Laura doesn't believe in anything, and when she dies, she, like, Anubis is like, oh, you're gonna go to nothing, and she's like, what the fuck? But that's not fair. Like, I had to believe in something.
Yeah.
And as an atheist, or as an Odinist, no, I'm kidding, I'm not. I hate Odinists.
As an Eric Dravenist.
As a... What?
The Crow.
The Crow.
Oh, yeah.
James O'Barst.
Yeah. George got it.
Everybody assumes that's why I have crow tattoos. It is not. It's because I am Odin.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That's the one eye.
Yes. Where was I going? Oh, it's kind of like, no, you have to believe in these things. And I'm going to do it. I'm comparing it to Supernatural. Supernatural has an American Gods episode. But there is also a lot of that whole, like, you know, supernatural stuff and gods are real and heaven and hell is real and all this crazy shit is real. You don't have to believe in it. You don't have to, like, participate in it. It's just there. And I think this might have too much of a message of, like, no, you need the gods because you're weak little humans.
I wonder, though, if they're going to come around to that and say, well, see, the truth is Anubis has no idea what happens to you if you're an atheist. I would not be surprised to find that out. So, yeah,
He's just been telling people nothing?
It's actually a pretty sweet thing for atheists.
Yeah.
The flip side of that
is a land of ice cream
throughout this, which is the gods are nothing without people.
Yeah, yes. And they are regularly threatened, like they mentioned that they're threatened by the idea of an atheist world. You know, in that last episode is specifically brought up.
They drive home the gods are creations of man, that man basically created gods in their image.
Right. So, I think there's some of that, like, whole you have to believe in something thing that bothers me. Hey, we should have Neil deGrasse Tyson as, like, the god of science. That would be pretty awesome.
That would be pretty cool.
But that's my complaint about the theme. They could turn around. Otherwise, I think this is one of the most gorgeous shows I've ever seen. Just, like, visually, so different from so many things. I think the style, the editing, the music is very different. Yeah, the music is great.
Except for that Blondie song in the last episode.
Well, Debbie Harry. Well, I love that song. You didn't like it?
Her new album's awful.
Oh. Is it? I've not heard it.
Well, she is like 70.
This song was written by the show's composer. And it was written to be that that style. I forgot the composer's name, but like the "I Feel Love" by Donna Summer, and he did like most of the early '80s soundtracks. Mm-hmm. It's very much that specific disco electronic feel that they're going for that this composer did, and Debbie Harry did vocals over it with Shirley Manson from Garbage.
Oh,
so
hey, Shirley Manson should show up.
Oh, good.
Another redhead.
I love that song.
It's. It's really something unique. I don't think it's really for everyone. I can totally see people being like, this is dumb.
It's got too much dick.
It's got so much dick. It offends my masculinity.
Well, I mean, it's definitely not a linear storyline on the whole.
That's
and the Witz-style storytelling is just going to turn some people off.
But I think this is my second favorite show this year. So I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 little spiders who crawled up a water spout.
I'm going to guess Handmaid's Tale was your favorite.
It was.
I thought
so. That's correct.
Harris?
My biggest complaint is, it's a little too rushed, honestly. Like, 8 episodes, on the one hand, means it is all killer, no filler. There is not a point where they are not illustrating things or giving moments to breathe, but at the same time they're rushing through the plot really quickly, and I would love to see a little more of the adventure of Odin and Shadow without having to sacrifice
buddy road trip.
Because you see a lot of what they got up to, with Chicago being a big, like, the big moment where you see, you know, see Mr. Wednesday in full con artist mode. But I would like to see a little bit more of them fleshed out and their relationship fleshed out together without having to take away from all these other gorgeous moments that we've had. So of all the people who've been allowed to breathe, I really would have loved to have seen Ricky Whittle and Ian McShane a bit more together. My other problem is that there are times that some of it just feels atonal. Like, there are moments of levity that, while I get while they're there, and because it's Brian Fuller and he likes doing stuff like that, there are times where it feels so off, and not as a welcome break or just a moment of surprise, but it just kind of, it takes away from things.
Yeah.
And there are some characters, I think, who got a little too one note. I mean, Salim's character was, I'm sad. Like, we got basically an episode and a half of him basically being sad, and it's great that he had his moment with the djinn, but then, you know, first he's sad being in America, you know, not selling anything, then he has this moment of ecstasy with the djinn, and then he's sad because the djinn is gone.
Right.
So, yeah, he kind of seems like he's not a real person who exists in this world.
Yeah, he's got the saddest eyes, too, and you just kind of want to cuddle him. Those are my only real complaints, because otherwise, this is, like you said, sir, it is a gorgeous show, and one that really merits very close examination. Just from the opening credits alone, one of my favorite things about that is how every single like camera switch on that shows, okay, there's this traditional thing, but then there's this more modern part of it, like the menorah that's also nothing but like audio plugs, or the shrouded Mary who's wearing a shroud of circuitry. And it all is just all of this great visual aesthetic. And just, it flows so well together, and it's so very lyrical, and so very well cast. I just wish that it didn't rush through the plot so quickly, so yeah. I'm going to have to give this 8 out of 10 smoked toad skins. Also, every single scene that Gillian Anderson in is a fucking gift, and continues to justify my ongoing crush on her since high school.
Yeah, I agree with, you know, obviously we've kind of all come to the same side of all the complimentary stuff we've said about this, of which there's much to say. Also, with the criticisms, I will add that, and this isn't really a problem with the show, this is a problem with me as a viewer, is that I'm so into the story it's going on that when they, and Hannibal did the same thing, it would get so into the style of it, or these beautiful long shots,
and
I'm like...
And there's like a trumpet, like... Yeah. And you're like, oh my god, I can't handle
it. I'm like, get on with it! That's real pretty! Now get on with it! Like, you get frustrated watching it sometimes. It's one of those I feel like I'll like it much more even the second time when I can relax and just enjoy it as a whole instead of waiting for the next thing to happen.
It's a great show to just have on while you're doing other things, yeah. Like after you've seen it three
yeah,
times.
Exactly. Yeah, but I really enjoy this. I think this is a solid first season. I hope that Starz is proud of it and that the numbers are good. I'm not actually aware at this point how it did in terms of that reception. I know critically, of course, it was extremely positive, but in terms of numbers on TV, I'm not exactly sure if they considered it a success. It looks kind of middling, actually. But... let's hope that this continues.
They already have a second season order, I believe.
Yes, they do. So. But it's such an expensive show. My fear is, A, they might slash the budget, which has killed more than one show before of this type.
But it's also a pay cable thing. So, you know, people are going to rewatch it through their Starz app.
People are, like HBO Go, this is destination TV.
Yeah.
People are signing up for it.
I hope that it's... between now and the second season, it gets enough of a following that they'll do something like simulcast the second season pilot in theaters. Because I would pay to go see episodes in a movie theater. It's just gorgeous. It's so well shot. Loving this. Can't wait to see more about some of these gods we've already met and just to be introduced to the new gods along the way. I give this 8 out of 10 things I imagine Gillian Anderson playing in future episodes. Characters. Okay, fine. Just Scully, then.
Whatofus.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to whatofus.net and don't forget your towel.